Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast all about making great mobile games, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the importance of building a culturally and ethnically diverse team. And why that's important is for making better games. So as part of that, we're going to be talking about catering to a more diverse audience and also understanding some of the underlying motivations of players, which also plays into these new diverse audiences that we are seeing in mobile games. So we have a very busy podcast. It can be really fascinating. And we have some great experts to talk about this subject. So first up, we have Anthony Casturo, who is the co-founder and CEO at HiDef. How's it going, Anthony?
Going well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. And we have a full set from HiDef today. So also joining us is Rick Fox, who is Chief of Business Officer.
Hey, John. Pleasure to meet everyone. Thanks for having us.
And also Jen Donahue, who's Head of Publishing and Marketing.
Hi, John. Happy to be here. Big fan of the podcast.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Introduction needed for Joel Junkanen, who's Head of Analytics at Game Refinery by Vungle. How's it going, Joel?
Hi, great to be here. It's actually been a while, so really glad to join in this time.
It has actually. No, you've not been on the last few, have you? So good to have you back.
Yeah, I haven't been. It's been my colleagues and other teammates, so Aaronos and Wilhelms and all. So it's great to be here again.
Good. So to kick us off, we're going to take a view on, from you actually, Joel, you can talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the mobile game space in terms of how games are starting to react to this. So I think we're in the early stages of really sort of getting to grips in a sort of fundamental manner. But we're starting to see some level of games allowing sort of more, allowing their audiences to sort of fulfill different sort of needs and motivations. So do you want to sort of kick us off with what you're seeing in terms of those trends?
Sure, John, yeah. Well, to begin with, I think when talking about mobile game development, I think you can look at diversity from kind of two angles or dimensions. And first one would be the so-called identity dimension that includes things such as players or your audience's gender and race and orientation. And then there's the other thing, the second kind of dimension, is the motivation dimension you mentioned. And that covers the reasons why certain players or your audience as a whole plays or then doesn't play your game. And if you think about from the kind of identity perspective, I think that the mobile game industry has started to take steps to the right direction together with other forms of entertainment media, talking about TV series, movies, but there's still a lot of progress to be made. And of course, I'm glad to have our guests here today. They surely have much more insights on this subject from game developers' perspective than myself. But when looking at the broader market, we at Game Refinery have witnessed an increase in the amount of diversity and choice players have, for example, regarding their avatar's gender orientation or appearance. And this is especially true in genres that kind of support this kind of features, like interactive stories, adventure games, where the immersion plays a big role. And it seems that developers of at least these genres have started to realize that giving players the option and possibility to play with the character they actually relate to increases engagement, retention, and then revenue. But then there are certain game types and genres that are not that so-called adaptable to reflect diversity from the identity perspective. If you think about like generic match-three games like Candy Crush, those games don't really have a clear elements that could be reasonably looked at from this kind of identity diversity point of view. And this brings me to the other important angle that I think when talking about player diversity plays a big role, and that's the motivational dimension. It's really important for developers to understand that area as well. Because in short, we all play games for a bit different reasons, and some of us want to, let's say, take a break from hectic everyday life to solve some puzzles or brain teasers. In other words, just relax a bit. And then other people enjoy like adrenaline rush they get from beating other players or in fast-paced shooter games or and such. So it's actually worth noting that same individual players might play different games to get the so-called fulfillment for different inner motivation drivers. And therefore, they might someday play Call of Duty for hours, but then other days it might have been a rough day at work, for instance. So they want to just relax, crush some candies, and kind of have a different kind of experience. And the kind of there, I think, lies the golden opportunity for developers, because if you have insights on what motivation drivers your current game build caters to, and then what are the key motivation drivers of your audience, you can develop the game of the direction that not only makes it more appealing to your current audience, but you can also open up more possibilities to acquire high LTV players from new player archetype cohorts. So I think there's, like I said, there are kind of two ways to look at this. It's the kind of identity level and then the motivation level. And both are really important, I think. And I hope that in both elements or dimensions, we continue the progress that we have started to make.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think even on a very kind of high level aspect, when you're talking about people choosing their avatars, I guess as society becomes more thoughtful about diversity, then I guess, you know, there's always been an element of avatars where some people always want to play as sort of themselves, and some people much happier to play as you know, different genders, or, you know, the whole point is to not play as themselves. And I guess as society gets more diverse, you want to sort of reflect that in many different ways. So let's talk a bit about Anthony, about you know, your thinking in this area. Obviously, you know, you're sort of putting your money where your mouth is with high def. The whole point of this is what you set up the company to do. So can you talk a little bit about your thinking around this and what you are hoping the company will end up doing and how that will sort of change the games that are being made?
Yeah, well, you know, it's innate to the company in terms of when we started High Def, the four founders all being biracial, which, I mean, that wasn't the reason we started the company, but there was a moment, I think, where Rick and I and Jace, you know, we're sort of sitting around the table going, you know, there's something different about us, right? And we don't look like a typical founders group. When you usually see a press release about a company, but our vision for what we wanted to do and what we wanted to build was always to be sort of these technology wizards who can help craft the culture and create experiences that bring joy to as many people as possible. And in order to do that, we have to be very inclusive. And I think it's pretty natural for us because of our experiences. Both as, you know, in our personal lives and also professionally, to want to create an environment both in the workforce, you know, as well as in the products and for the audiences that we're trying to address. So I think, you know, there are some, you know, pretty fundamental things that drove us to create our own company to do that. So, you know, when I met Rick and Jace, I was, you know, working at another company, and they were working on some things related to that. And, you know, I left that company, and I think the last straw for me was my boss telling me that my coaching and mentoring and empowering style of management was inappropriate. And, you know, that was a moment for me to go, yeah, I don't think this is going to work out. so I'm going to move on, and I'm going to go create a company where that's okay, right? and some of you might, you know, be aware of you know, some of the things that Rick was doing before High Def, and some of the environment that he found himself in at the highest level of partners, where there was intolerance and people felt like it was okay to use divisive language and racial epithets to make their point. And Rick took a stand about that. And so those things happen just before we kind of came across this idea and decided it was finally an opportunity for us to get into business together. But a lot of that had to do with our belief that, you know, a diverse and inclusive approach, both at the company level, but also from an audience perspective and everything else. And you could see that represented in how at the founding level, our fourth member, Dr. David Washington, you know, is chief impact officer. That's not something you see very often in a founding group. But I knew that when I started my next company, I wanted to make sure that we had a really foundational approach to corporate governance that, you know, related to all things about our responsibilities to how we treat our communities, our our vendors, our not just our investors who are important, our employees, you know, and so I think you could see through and through that we take that very seriously.
I guess we're sort of framing this in multiple ways. You know, one thing is, I guess, the argument that by having a diverse sort of group of people making a game, you're going to make a better game. You know, I guess that's the one element of it. But equally, I guess from another point of view, you know, if you look at, I guess, recruiting a diverse team is I imagine harder than not doing that. So in a sense, do you feel like you are making it is harder for you to do what you do to sort of get the same level out as people who didn't sort of have this mission. How do you sort of, I guess when you talk to people, I guess the primary example here are investors, you know, they may sort of care, but investors generally care about how much money they're going to get out the other end. You know, they may have other secondary sort of ideas. I don't know, maybe I'm being mean to investors here, but how do you sort of play with those sort of, because that's a sort of hard sort of argument that I imagine you have to sort of overcome.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And there is a certain element of what we have to do as a startup that where we have to be pragmatic, right? We can't not fill positions that have to be filled because we can't, find a specific type of person to fill that role. And ultimately, that's not really exactly what this is about. As an aside, I will say I've been very pleased and impressed by the quality of investors that we've come across who do actually care about these things. I think there's definitely a sea change in, you know, the things that people care about when they're investing aren't just, you know, how much money you're going to make. Although I think people are starting to realize that some of these things are good business, right? So, and we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, we have a responsibility as people who have found success in our industry to try and help the industry move along and catch up with some of the other industries in the space. If you look at, you know, film and television and music, they've done a lot of work to get people, a diverse group of people into roles that, you know, provide direction, provide creative, you know, instruction into senior roles. And the game industry is far behind in that. So a lot of what we're doing on the outreach side, we may not be, you know, always successful in, you know, having a completely diverse organization. But when people see people like us, I think, first of all, we start to see some outreach where they may not have reached out or felt as confident to reach out before. But also, we have to do a lot of work at the ground level. So working with universities and working with other programs and incubators that have these missions to help find those opportunities. And, you know, in the near future, we'll be talking about some pretty significant investments we're going to make into empowering diverse content creators to help them get into the industry in the first place, right? Because there's a definite pipeline problem. And yeah, as an entrepreneur, we have to very carefully, you know, juggle how long and how much time we spend in any particular recruiting activity versus, hey, we have a business to do. But as our social impact officer likes to say, there's nothing wrong with doing well while you do good. And we're trying to play it forward by acting that way all the time.
Rick, so we'll move on to you. I guess before I throw a question at you, maybe it'd be good for you to give a little potted history of yourself, because we're all very much in the game space. I'm sure Americans will know who you are, but maybe not everyone in the game space outside America would know who you are. So do you want to give us a little potted history and explain a bit about your background?
Okay, I'll try and keep it as as quick as possible. I think to sum it up, my history is a background in media, sports, gaming, and entertainment. And so having been a professional athlete of, 15 years, having played and lived on the stages of the NBA for those years, I developed, an understanding of team dynamics and winning at the highest level, building group excellence. So as I transitioned into TV and movies, being on a set was a similar experience in that I used my skills from the one field to transition over into the movie and entertainment world, where once again group dynamics were a huge role in my life. I'm telling stories and finding a voice using my voice to share stories that change people's lives was a huge part of the mission there. And then as I have always been a father, as I continue to experience what it's like to be rocket fuel for your own young son and daughter's life. For me, my son did not want to go into the family business of being an NBA basketball player. He had his own dreams. He wanted to be an Anthony Costoro. He wanted to be a Jace Hall. And as he moved out to California to go to college, I realized in him this burning desire to find a way into the industry of games and wanting to have a life, living a passionate life of as a game developer. But he had this muted sense of expression about it. Whereas myself, very outward going and very expressed about what I want to do and who I want to be doing things with, he was a little more muted. And for me as a parent, I thought, how do I get behind his passion and show him and model what that looks like? And as I kind of stepped out into my network, Jace Hall was a dear friend of 12 years, and he had made video games since the age of 18, went on to build Warner Brothers Interactive from the ground up. And fortunately for me, I had the access to these men whose stories need to be told more frequently. But also my son got to share time with them. And his desire of looking around in the industry and finding people that he could model his career after, there just weren't a ton of people visible to him. So he's blessed to have these personal relationships. But for me, as I discovered the quality and the level of talent out there in the world, just from my own search myself, I discovered that for him, he was just one of many that shared the same passion that Anthony did as a kid, that Jace did as a kid. And he just needed more of an understanding of the blueprint, the roadmap. He needed more of an opportunity to an open door. Now, my journey into the game space was through my son. We became esports organization owners. And then I got a deeper understanding through Riot Games and the experiences there with League of Legends of what it meant to build a game. I was fortunate to be behind the scenes and have conversations with game developers in an organization that was willing to share that knowledge and that experience with me. As I grew in my aptitude around that, my son grew as well. He got access that most people don't get. But now he lives in the game world, living a life as a game developer. And he has gotten to know the very few, and we're hoping a lot more of men and women who share his stories and that look like him. And so my passion being a part of this business with Anthony and Jace and Dr. Washington and Jen, the rest of our staff, is to be leaders in the space, to create a home and a company that speaks a language that the industry speaks, but also starts to be attentive to the young men and women out there who have stories, that have a voice, that have a vision for the stories that they want to tell, that they can look out there in the world and see. And it's always helpful just to be able to see people that sound like you, look like you, regardless of the language they speak, how tall they are. It's just a comfort in that, right? And so although our mission is to just make great games that speak to the masses and touch their hearts, and they can see themselves in our games, they can play the games and create content themselves that they feel expressed through, because that's where we're all going in the game space. We want them also to feel like what we're creating is something that they can create themselves at some point.
Should just say, you're being very modest, but you were captain of the LA Lakers and won 3 NBA championships. So there was that bit.
Oh, yeah, that part. Yeah. Won some championships, have a bloodline of basketball excellence that's pretty blessed.
Yeah. Okay, so good. So Jen, you sort of have this idea of sort of building out a diverse team, which you know, in and of itself has, you know, kind of see is really useful, and it, you know, obviously kind of widens the kind of the scope of people looking up in future and getting jobs in the industry. But how does this sort of help players? You know, how are you sort of bringing this sort of, I guess, foundational layer to actually the products and sort of it not just being sort of a nice sort of social movement that you've got going there?
Yeah. So from a marketing and a publishing perspective, you know, I started off in the toy industry for many, many years. My very first job was making Star Wars toys, and it's been downhill since there. And then I transitioned into the game industry. And I've been at EA, Zynga, Riot Games, Scopely. And the reason why I joined this company is everything that Anthony and Rick just said is, as a woman in games and also as an LGBT member, it is very, very difficult to feel like my voice is heard in the making of games, let alone on the other side of it as a player that these games are made for me. And now that I'm in the position of, you know, running publishing and marketing at a small startup whose mission is to make games with a diverse voice, because it is a better business outcome for players and for our investors to do this, you know, I was just so honored and blessed to be a part of this opportunity. So a couple of stories I wanted to tell you about, you know, why this matters, because, you know, number one is there is data that says that this is true. There's a woman called Frances Fry, who is a Harvard Business School professor who actually worked with Riot and has many books on how diverse teams actually lead better business outcomes and better cultural environments for the team making the game. So I encourage you guys to look up the work that she has done in that space. But two kind of anecdotal stories that I've lived through in the world of making games. So one is a little bit of an older story. I was at EA, and I, as part of what I did at EA was work with Hasbro, which is a company that makes famous board games. You might know them, Scrabble, Monopoly, but also children's toy lines. And one of them was called Littlest Pet Shop. And this is a product that is a bunch of cute little pets for 8-year-old little girls. And so at the time I was making this game for the DS, if you all remember the Nintendo DS, it had a very broad age group. So the product team making our Littlest Pet Shop game was a group of designers who made the Godfather game, Tiger Woods. So, you know, games for really, you know, adult men. And the team making this was actually in Salt Lake City. And so they had a lot of children, a lot of little girls, but they're fathers. And so they said, Jen, we got this. We're going to make the pets. We're going to have them battle. We're going to have them take down the evil pet. And I was like, no. That's not what little girls want. I had come from the toy industry, so I knew what the play patterns were for little girls. And I said, let's test this with little girls. Let's take your idea and show it to them before we make the game. Little girls literally crapped on the idea. They said, no. We want hair play. We want to nurture them. We want to accessorize them. And so this team of men realized that they were making the game for themselves and not for their daughters. So they all went home, talked to their daughters, really understood what they wanted to do. That game went on to make to sell 4 million units the next year around the world. A game for 8-year-old little girls on the DS was one of the top charting games that year. So that's just one example of not having a diverse group of people who realize the value of diversity. Now, you know, Joel had a great point earlier about avatars, and we have seen this problem where normally when you have avatars, you're presented, do you want to be a male or a female? As part of an LGBT, you know, community member, I'm actually not non-binary, but I recognize that because I have a gap in knowledge, I went out to my fellow community members and said, help us. What would you like to have and what would you like to experience as an avatar? And what was really interesting is we have some motion capture in the product that we're building. And they said, well, why didn't you, did you record any motion capture with non-binary members? And we looked at each other, we're like, oh my God, we didn't, but we will do that. And we will make sure that all of the accessories fit on all characters. We will offer the opportunity for people to enter their own pronoun or not have pronouns dependent in the game. And by really, you know, listening to that community and really having them be an inclusive part of the experience, they were just thrilled to be asked their opinion and asked what they wanted. And so those in a sense are fans for life. They've said, please invite us back. People want to be heard. And ultimately, you know, it's just a benefit for everyone. Sorry, super long stories, but hopefully those touch on what is really, really important And, you know, Joel and I are going to be best friends after this because he has the data to show that this is actually the right thing to do.
Can I add something? Because
go for it.
Just anecdotally, one of the funny things about when you take the time to ask lots of different people what they want, as someone who's been in the online, you know, my career started in the online space. I was working on, you know, MUDs in the early 90s and Ultima Online, Star Wars Galaxies, games like that. Games that had lots of avatar systems. So a lot of RPGs and things. And, you know, to put into the game the requirements in many cases of, hey, only these avatars can use these clothes, for example, right? Is actually more work sometimes than it is to just let people put whatever they want on. That's not always the case, but often it is. And if we were to have, you know, if we ask those questions and realize, oh, we don't have to have these restrictions, and sometimes it's even less work to give people what they want. This is one of the fascinating things about the game development process, the complexity of what we try to do and the assumptions we make about what people want or don't want if we don't ask or we don't have a diverse, you know, group of people to have a conversation about it.
Actually, Jen, your story reminded me of a, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but there's a UK developer in the 1990s who made a basketball game, and they'd never played basketball. They'd never seen a basketball game at that stage, because before all these things happened, and they quite happily went away and made a basketball game, which obviously was not terribly successful. But that was the stuff you could do, you know, not that long ago. Thankfully, we've moved on.
I think the point is that you don't have to have, you can do both. And hopefully my story gives you in a sense of, you can be an ally and you can spend the time as a developer to get to learn your customers. So giving a public service announcement for the Game Refinery platform, as a startup, I would have had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars doing my own research to understand the motivations, the feature prioritization, and the wants and needs of my customer. But I was able to go into the platform and really identify quickly what are the motivations, what are the key features for the audience that we're making our game. And so I was able to take that knowledge and that understanding and teach a team of people so that we have the common foundation of what does our player, what does our customer want and need. And the developers love this because it helps them know how to make a better game by understanding what is it that they want, what is it they want to play, and how do they want to play that. Then I can come up with my innovative ideas as a game maker to make that a better experience. So thank you, Game Refinery Platform, for all of that help and expediting the work that I need to do as a marketing partner to my studio friends.
So far we've, I guess, spoken sort of fairly generally around the topic. Ante, can you talk a little bit, or what can you say about actually what you're doing in a bit more of a concrete manner?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we're not yet talking about the products that we're building, but what I can say is that, you know, we're building a diverse team. If you look at the organization that we're building, I think this is a really important point we need to make clear. We're not about excluding anyone. And our message isn't that, oh, you know, if you are part of the majority, that you don't have a place. We're not saying that at all. What we're talking about is having an open mindset, using good data, and really thinking about the fact that creativity is the intersection of two seemingly unconnected, unrelated thoughts. And a great way, you know, to connect the two unconnected ideas is to have people with different experiences work with each other, right? And another one is to do research with an open mindset to look for new ideas and connections. And so we're mobile first, and we're building a self-publishing organization to bring our flagship game to market. You know, we've announced partnership. A relationship with Unity that's going to help us do that. And part of the reason that is working so well is not only, you know, are they making tech that's great for us, that we can use to rapidly build our products and on many platforms and all that, but also that a company like Unity is highly aligned with our vision there in terms of, you know, getting behind and actually putting, you know, money where they're, you know, with what they're talking about when it comes to social impact. So it was it yesterday that Dr. David Washington interviewed Common for the keynote of the Unity for Humanity. So we're making sure that we're also working with and partnering with companies that have this mindset, support this mindset, and will help us reach diverse audiences, right? And it's not hard to find. I mean, I think people are getting the message, which is exciting. But so we're, you know, in addition to building a product that we believe is going to have global appeal, that is very inclusive and lets people express themselves, and you know, you throw all the keywords out there with metaverse and crypto and NFTs and whatever, but all those things are just technology, right? And so our focus on those is how do we create great experiences, you know, for a large number of people and give them things that they haven't done before, so they can, you know, that are excited to try new things. And that requires us to build a team with all kinds of experiences. So it's nascent right now, right? But it's going really well. And it's an interesting challenge because building games is a team sport, and it always has been, right? It's not the kind of thing you can do on your own.
Which is a great segue. I mean, Rick, as Anthony said there, I mean, I assume there are fundamentals of building teams, no matter whether it's a sport or a business or a whatever sort of organization is being built. But you know, what have you noticed? Is there anything in games that's sort of different from sports teams when you're trying to build a, you know, a well balanced team? And how, I mean, I guess basketball tends to be quite, you know, obviously there's a fixed number of players actually on the pitch, obviously a larger sort of a overall player count, whereas games can get very big. I mean, is there a scaling thing there? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I'm working through it right now with my teammates here. What I will tell you, to Anthony's point, the diversity around our organization, or the exploration and desire to see our team grow with many different voices and viewpoints, is important. Regardless of the size of your team, first, I'm a group dynamics guy, so I love teamwork. So I like going to work. I like being in environments where I can collaborate and grow with others, but at the same time celebrate with others. Our hard work is work we do 24/7 here, and at the end of the day, it's stressful. We're not always graceful amongst ourselves, maybe in the way we go about our work, but having a respect for each other is important. For those sports fans out there that also are game developers, I would say, can you imagine the NBA with just American players? Right? How uninteresting would that be today, right? Well, I grew up in an era where I was one of the first international players to play in the NBA at a time in the 90s when 99% of the players were just American, right? So if you look at our beautiful game now there in the NBA, some of our best players, the MVP was an international player. Luka Doncic, my favorite player now, is not an American player, right? So the diversity alone and what the game of basketball looks like is no different than the diversity you can find within a team, right? Our team and our growth here at HiDef is really centered on, first, not only finding voices, unique voices and unique points of views, regardless of where they come from in the world, regardless of what their orientation is ethnicity-wise. It doesn't matter to us. It's that you have an expertise that we have looked globally for, and we've kept our minds and our hearts open to our team growing from that place. And then once we get everybody in the huddle, as you would say, being available for a point of view and being open and listening to the ideas that come, regardless of different times, how passionately and ungraceful they can be, but having a lot of room and space for the team to grow from that place. For me, I've seen a lot of beautiful things happen in my life when excellence is pursued together, and the ideas and the points of views are allowed to breathe. We're building teams like that. As I share my vantage point and point of view, I lean on Jen, I lean on Anthony, I lean on my teammates to actually bring theirs to the table as well. I think it's why we've had the fast growth and success we're having is because we look the way we look and we sound the way we sound and we come from so many different angles.
You know, I have to jump in here because I'm sure that there's people who are just wondering, what is it like, you know, to have Rick Fox, you know, at your company? You know, what does that bring to the table? What's different? Yeah, people, I'm sure people are interested in that, right? And I've only known Rick for, I don't know, four, maybe 5 years at this point now. But the last 2 years of working with him has been really, it's been enriching for me, but also just really fascinating to, you know, sometimes making these games, trying to make a game is a business. And when you're doing it as a startup, it's a tough business, right? Entrepreneurialism is a tough thing right now, going through COVID is tough. So, you know, Rick has the ability to really read other people and really kind of get to the heart of what is the opponent team's motivation? Which of those players is having a bad day? What is the strategy that these guys, who should we, you know? And so for everything from interviewing an employee, a potential employee, and then, you know, having the typical sort of interviews that we normally have, and having Rick involved in that process, and then Rick calling me afterwards and going, you know, did you think about this? Because as he was talking, I was like, I mean, he's really insightful into how people think. And I think there's a reason he was a team captain on the Lakers, right? And also when it comes to team dynamics. Now, there is a difference between, you know, being in the corporate world and being in the NBA. I think in the NBA, there were times when Rick was able to maybe get a little heated in a way that isn't normal for the corporate world.
Yeah.
but you know,
all of those, I'm going to add, I have to share this. He's so right when you bring that up. Like what happens in a locker room or what happens in a huddle, what happens on the pitch, as you would say, isn't necessarily the language that, you know, corporate America would speak, right? But so much of what, and Jen's a sport and an athlete, so much of what I think I've learned from my peers and being in business with Anthony and Jace is finding, so I'm growing and stretching, right, as a human being by being in circles where methods are different than what I've traditionally been used to having, right? But at the same time, I'm bringing a level also of execution and rhythm and methods that is stretching them. And so the beauty of that, like you say, what's an athlete like me doing in the game development space? It's not what I studied, right? It's not my core competence. But the gift for me in this experience, not only being a passionate game player, is that I'm learning what it means to build a game, but I'm also learning and I'm also helping teach what it means to be a championship level team. And so that's my gift to the group and my service to the group and team is understanding how, when it's whether it's Shaq and Kobe, who I played with, right? Whether those two individuals don't get along over a certain idea, finding a way to bridge their points of view and have the value of that meet in the center and have something amazing come out of it. And we did that for years. So Anthony sharing that made me laugh because he's right.
Am I Shaq or am I Kobe?
I say you're Phil Jackson. You're Phil Jackson, yeah.
I like that.
So I equate a lot of those experiences and I bring them to the company from that point of view.
I wanted to add that, you know, Rick's superpower, you know, so I am a footballer. So since, you know, I'm a soccer player and a goalie, even that, so I'm a little bit crazy or a keeper. But Rick's superpower that he brings that bridges all of us together is this level of empathy. And I think in the game space, when there's, you know, as a woman, there's a lot of like locker room talk at many game companies, you know, to keep the sports analogies going. But because Rick brings this empathy and teaches us all this empathy, it allows everyone at our company, we know we're not going to have those experiences that Activision Blizzard is having or, you know, Riot has had in the past. I mean, my view and my hope for this industry is that we get to the point where all of these negative stories about company culture and the divisiveness happening just go away because the level of empathy that we should all have for each other allows us to just view everyone you know, as not as the same, but we all view our individual viewpoints as something that is important to bring to the table. So that's what I feel Rick's superpower is for us right now. There's many others, but that's just one.
And it is interesting. I mean, Anthony, you used the term sort of metaverse. I'm obviously not going to say too much about that, but I guess as sort of the design of games becomes, you know, much less non-linear, much more sort of open, and, you know, games are going to have, you know, for those sort of quite, kind of feature-driven reasons, game developers are going to have to sort of approach things in a very different way to, this is a game where you get a gun and shoot people. I mean, that's, you know, there's a totally different culture has to come out of those experiences. So you can't have the same people making, or you can imagine success is gone. You go.
Well, absolutely. And when it comes to technology, right, like, again, diversity of perspective and experience is important. I mean, just, I'm sure you're all aware of the stories about what's happened with AI, everything from facial recognition to, but technology gets bias built in by the people that build it. So if you have a more diverse perspectives going into building the experiences, the technology, the things that underlie it, you're maybe more likely to be inclusive in the outcome of that technology, because I sincerely doubt that the people who went to go build facial recognition were like, ha ha ha, let's make it so it doesn't work with Black people. That's not what they were trying to do, right? But if they had more diverse people working with in the first place, they would have encountered those problems earlier on, and they would have been thinking about those things maybe a little earlier on. And that's really, I mean, that's just kind of the foundation. So when it comes to crypto, NFT, metaverse, you know, what are the experiences of the larger audience, of the global perspective of humanity, not just, you know, the experiences of a small set of people in a homogeneous environment? And that's really all this is about.
And I guess, again, I don't know if you guys are doing a lot of user-generated content stuff, but clearly that's sort of embedded to some degree in the metaverse. And I think that's really the most interesting thing, because then you're sort of, the idea of what a developer is sort of becomes, I think, much more fluid in a quite an interesting way, because, you know, you have different people interacting with the underlying product in very different ways, and very different experiences come from that.
Yeah, and it's very unpredictable, and it can be very nerve-wracking for the developers, because you're sort of giving up some of giving your baby to someone else. But I mean, you have to sort of embrace that, right?
Good. We're sort of coming to the end. Where do you guys kind of see the industry being in sort of 10 years time on this sort of level? You know, we're at the very sort of early stages of it. Do we think, you know, this is just something that sort of very quickly becomes embedded into sort of the DNA of making games, and we don't really talk about it because we don't need to anymore? I mean, how quickly does that change happen?
You know, what I hope is that maybe inside of 10 years, right, we'll be looking at data that people like you produce, right? That tells us that we've done a good job, right? That that the people who are playing the games are represented in what they're hoping to have, what their experiences are, with this similar data of who's producing them, right? And that we can see from the results of the work and the effort that not just us, but a lot of people are putting into this space. That those efforts are being rewarded by the engagement of the users and by the satisfaction of the play patterns and all of those things. And that we're not really even talking about this anymore, because it's just good business, right, to try to have lots of different perspectives when you're doing a creative endeavor.
Anyone else want to jump in on that?
I can't wait till there's more women in the industry. Sorry, I'll get a little bit personal. At many companies, you know, my whole career, even in the toy industry, women are 20%, you know, and some, maybe 30 if it's a really diverse company. Women are 30%. I think what you're seeing now as players, especially when you look at the top charts in mobile or anything, half or even more of the revenue is coming from women as recipients or players of the game. Yeah. And what's great is because women are playing more games. I mean, I grew up playing Wizardry and Choplifter on the Commodore 64. Like, I've played games my entire life, and I grew up not seeing other people like me. And now that I'm getting to a stage in my career where I can play it forward and I can help more women get into making games, that love playing games, like I said, that's my personal mission, that this company and where we are at this stage in the game industry is really helping me do. And it's the thing that I'm most excited about. Listen, I love making games. I've made many, many games. And by make, I understand that I'm the marketing person, but I'd like to think that I help a little bit.
Hey, that's legit. It's a team sport.
Yes.
It's a team sport. Yeah. And I think that, you know, playing that role, it's been one of the most inspiring things for me, and what motivates me and why I come to work every day isn't that I get a paycheck. It's because I get to have an impact on women in gaming in the future. And it's why I do what I do. And thanks to these guys for giving me that chance.
Rick, you got anything you want to add?
Yeah, no, I'm lost. I fell down right there because I'm so proud to be in business with both of you. Really, I mean, to me, finding the future in games and being a part of that is a blessing, because I'm growing as a human being, and I'm growing because I'm learning more not only about making games, but I'm learning more about the world around me, the people and their voices, and the things that matter to them. And when I can understand society from all these different points of views, I can impact and be an added value to others in my life. And so when we talk about a metaverse, I just think that whether it's 10 years, whether it's tomorrow, that as long as we're moving towards greater inclusion and greater acceptance of what others have to bring and have to offer, then the happier I am, because I'm going to play games till I'm on my deathbed. I just hope that the people that are creating them and creating this user-generated content go from just their expression through playing games to their desire to find a way through technology to make them themselves and tell their own stories.
I think that is a brilliant point at which to say thank you very much to our guests, Anthony, Jen, Rick, and of course Joel. Thanks, guys. That was really, really fascinating. I think we only sort of really started to get into what's going to be a very sort of deep topic for the games industry. But I think that was a really good starting point from lots of different angles.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Pleasure meeting you, Joel.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Bib.
And thanks, of course, to everyone listening and watching in the various forms which this sort of podcast, videocast is presented. Please subscribe through podcast channels or on YouTube. Or the usual video places. It's really great if you have any feedback or give us some nice reviews. That's fantastic. It helps other people find what we're doing. And of course, every month we are talking to people like Hidef who are sort of building out this great new sort of future of games, and games are really changing and becoming very different. And we're really interested to cover that and support that. So I hope you're enjoying it. Come back next time, see what's going on in the Mobile Game Dev Podcast.